So did I find you in Germany, or where do I find you in the world at this
I'm
moment?
actually in Germany, in Munich, where I'm living currently. As you know, because of the COVID-19 situation, traveling is a little bit restricted.
You've been working as an executive. I looked up at your profile at LinkedIn, and you've been traveling quite a bit, and then in Japan and South Korea, and then Google, and then something which you call Wisdom Together, which I think is amazing development. In this moment, which is a very unique, I would say, opportunity, because it's not just one person stopping and reflecting, but it's the whole world forced to stop. How is it for you now? How are you doing?
Well, I'm actually doing well, even though I have to say this kind of crisis is a special crisis. I feel that it's the first time I see that collectively governments around the world are making similar decisions. And I also see collectively around the world, more or less, with some exceptions, that the media is really not reflecting the diversity which I hoped it would be. So my question was always like, what is happening here? The one thing is to protect the people from the virus, but also there you have different approaches and different opinions from, specialists, same field, scientists saying, one part of the scientists saying we have to lock down and everybody has to be separate. And other scientists, like in Sweden, for instance, this country is following a different approach. They are saying, why not locking down the vulnerable people? The 5% who are really threatened by this virus and let the others being free and as quickly infected as possible. So that is their approach. And of course, there is probably not an objective solution for everything. What I'm trying to do is dealing with the situation and trying to find out what does it mean for me, what does it mean collectively for the country I'm living in, but also for the world, and what can we contribute to anticipate maybe the insecurities and the threats, what we probably see, not only because of the virus, but mainly from my perspective, because of the lockdown decisions of the governments.
It's actually interesting when you mentioned Sweden and their own approach. And now I've just saw the comment their government has provided about how isolated they feel. So they wanted to be open, but they feel isolated. And I think that, well, I am finding that there is an amazing visual representation about how connected everything is to everything. And then this isolation is actually a little bit of a false thing.
The virus shows us on the one hand side what globalization means. And that there is no borders actually, that everything is connected to everything. On the other hand side, the reaction of our government and the reaction of a lot of people is separation. So separation is definitely not the answer for dealing with this kind of situation from my perspective. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be aware about the threat of a virus, that we should protect the vulnerable people, that we should know what is happening, not neglecting what is happening, but being more open on diverse opinions and taking the time to finding a decision. This is not the time for quick decisions, from my perspective. And some politicians are using, actually, I see that in Germany, we are a federal state and every of this federal politicians try to position themselves as a strong leader who has the answer for everything. And that is, I think we shouldn't go this path. I think we should, this is a time for asking meaningful questions. And through meaningful questions, you know, having the time and creating the space, what might emerge out of it? And that is what I see also in the business side. You know, currently everybody is even more rushing into digitalization. But is this really the answer? I feel that technology can only provide an augmented tool for us, but never substitute the real connection, the possibility and the potential of what we have as humans. And so to finding a balance, and this is the time for discovering and developing it. On the one hand side, we see we need more agile organizations. We need more, you know, working in a matrix kind of situation where we have experts and teams working together on certain issues and certain problems. I think, and that needs a certain understanding of culture. And this culture should be based on purpose and meaning. And purpose and meaning is more and more important. Culture for organizations, for companies, for countries, is more important than ever, what I feel.
If there is anything new that, you know, open a possibility that I didn't know before. So I was wondering, if was there anything you learned or something that surprised you from this period or from interactions you had with people, or, you know, you as a coach probably had a lot of access to a lot of experience that is just special. Did anything surprise you? Was there anything you learned?
Surprisingly for me, indeed, was that that a lot of people are seems to block themselves from certain perspectives, from certain views, what they had before. You know, I know that people are developing gradually in certain developing stages, and that not only on an individual basis, but also collectively, you see that certain countries are at a certain stage. If you compare Saudi Arabia, for instance, where they are, because they leapfrog from a very kind of archaic structure and organization in 50 to 100 years to a modern, so-called modern society. But of course, they are still suffering and dealing with other problems than what we are dealing with in Europe, for instance. And individually at the same time. But what surprised me indeed was that when I see how the media is just focusing on one topic, I couldn't hear it anymore at a certain point of time.
Yeah.
And all the questions which were there before, like how do we deal with our democracy, for instance? How do we deal with, you know, my question, which I sent to a friend in Norway, I said, you know, why don't we ask ourselves still the question, what is happening with Julian Assange from WikiLeaks? He is still in prison for no reason. He is, you know, so, and what does it mean for our societies if we are not dealing with this question? It's not about Julian Assange per se, even though I think he is sick and we should treat him differently. But it's the overall problem which are no longer in the focus and no longer discussed and neglecting from nearly everybody. We have treated, the EU has treated the refugees in the borders of Greece just before COVID came in, and jeopardizing the Geneva Convention, which we are trying to enforce in other countries. And we are jeopardizing it and threatening it by ourselves. So no discussion about this anymore. Instead, what we see is that our so-called leaders are actually diminishing and decreasing our civil rights. And everybody is applauding and saying, great, thank you. Thank you for doing this. And that really surprised me that so many people, also well-educated people, supporting this path and not asking themselves the question, so what does it mean for our society currently? What does it mean if we are not asking these questions anymore and just focusing on how can we protect ourselves from a virus, which came for certain governments to the right moment, you know, as you see what happens in China, for instance, you know, yeah. In Hong Kong, this democracy demonstration were killed by the excuse of the virus, you know. That's how China reacted on this. You see, and you see the same thing in other countries. You know, even in Germany, it is the case. And I spoke recently to a friend of mine. He's an author of several books, and he wrote another book, which will be published soon. It's about the time in the 70s in Germany where we had this terrorist organization called RAF, and there were the government implemented harsh measures because they wanted to protect the society. Until today, a lot of these harsh decisions and measurements haven't been taken back. They're still there. So my question right now is, you know, what did we implement on the basis of COVID, of a so-called threat to us? And how can we make sure that this will be corrected after the virus? Or after this crisis. And that is something where I think we need to make, we need to create a context. And this is a context what Rather is doing is great, because all this kind of conversation helps people to get a little slight different perspective and an orientation. And I think this is what we need in the future. I think I expecting that in 3, 6, 12 months, we will probably face, severe situation based on the economic lockdown. And this can come, some professors I'm talking to, they are expecting a currency reform based on what the ECB and the Fed and so are doing right now. And that is an underlying trend which nobody currently sees, you know.
Okay.
I'm always surprised also based on the stock market. You know, I was seeing the stock markets went down, you know, in March by 30%, 20%, something wrong. And I said, let's see what this means. And now it's nearly back again. It's back to the time before COVID. And that is based on the 1.7 billion euros, which the EU and several governments are pushing into the market. So there is this kind of, we are building a house on a certain wooden blocks, and we know that most of them are gone already, and there will be a huge flood coming in. But we're putting another stick underneath it, another stick, and we're having a party in the house and saying, great, we are doing fine. And I think what we need to do, I don't want to have a negative scenario, because I see that the future is emerging always out of crisis. So, Churchill once said, never waste a good crisis. And I think what we can do is really individually even more to connect with ourselves. And I'm doing a lot of meditation these days. So I'm doing 1 or 2 hours of meditation a day, very early morning, very late night, where I'm trying just to observe what is happening in me and how do I react, how does my body react on what I perceive, on the information, on the impulses, what I see, what's happening. Trying to make senses out of that, out of these impulses. And not trying to listen too much to news or to other people predict what will happen and then get into the spiral of negativism. More to try to stay with myself and trust with myself. Sigi Jung once said, I'm not what happened to me. I'm what I choose to become. And that is something we should, especially in times of crisis, should always remember.
So you started to speak a little bit on that individual. Well, let's go a little, if I may invite you to go a little bit on individual level and a little bit on the glimpse. I don't know if that is visible yet. I'm not that sure. I think we are more or less, we are still in the whirlpool of everything going on. But in your area, in the field that you are working on, do you see anything that you might say, oh, that's an interesting development? Is there anything?
Well, I see definitely people on different levels of our society see them questioning the GDP strategy of growth. Yeah, I see people are asking themselves, is that really needed to have growth per se? Is that the instrument which we are seeing in our societies? And I see that from business people, I see that from professors in universities, I see that even from politicians who are asking themselves.
Is it more than it was before?
Much more. There is a movement actually, it's called, a friend of mine has started that. One is a professor of economics and politics, and he's right now a member of the parliament in Italy. Lorenzo Fioramonti, and there is another lady from Australia. She worked for a long time for Oxfam in Glasgow, Scotland. She, Catherine Trebeck, and they founded a movement called the Global Wellbeing Alliance, where they started it already before COVID, and they started it in connecting people, and the first conference was in 2017 in Edinburgh, which were the chief economic officer from the New Zealand government was there, the president from Slovenia was there, and there were chief economic officer from Costa Rica were there, and a lot of politicians who said, what are alternatives in GDP? And I see that this movement is growing. More people are aligned to this, asking themselves the question, is materialistic wealth, and is the growth for this, just focusing on that, is that the right way forward? And that is really a question. Even Macron has recently said that he is questioning the way we have constructed our supply chain in a globalization, which is so fragile, which we can see in these crises. What he, of course, meant was that the supply for certain medical products were no longer available because the pharmaceutical industry, they are just cut it down, the variety of suppliers, just focusing on one supplier in the cheapest country in the world, so that the margin is the best for them. And when they actually struggled, as we saw in China in the beginning, or in India right now, then, you know, these products couldn't be delivered on the market. With this question comes a deeper meaning, the meaning of, is that way of construction where we're using, in a globalized world, the cheapest countries and the weakest legal structure to optimize our profit margin? And that is a question which I see occurring in a lot of political conversations right now. And I see that actually in the civil society, that I see much more people who are starting collaborative companies, going into social entities. That doesn't mean that you cannot make any money. It just means that money is just one result out of the thing. But they also asking themselves, what kind of product am I providing to the society? Is the environment okay with that, what I'm doing? What is the footprint, what I'm doing? is the social balance. How do I, so how do I treat my employees? How do I treat my suppliers? How do I treat my customers? And the third thing is also, what does it mean for the development, the overall personal spiritual development of our society? And I think these are valid questions which are bubbling up right now in the civil society mainly. And I personally believe that civil society is probably where change will start and happen. It's not the politician.
No, but probably the cracking of the current economic structure, the cracking of the current political thinking. I just wonder what it would take to crack that kind of thinking. And what I was amazed to see from the, you know, Minneapolis right now, about after the riots, they are kind of thinking that they are, maybe we need to change the police structure in Minneapolis. That's the crack of thinking. I don't know, because that's on political level. So I was just wondering if how these movements or ways of thinking, what it would take to crack the more mainstream thinking. Do you see anything happening? At the beginning, really, COVID took over every conversation on public discourse. Mm. But do you think it's coming? What's coming out? What's cracking? Do you think anything is cracking, really?
I think Leonard Cohen has done the song "The Crack," which is a great song, by the way. You know, there's a crack in heaven where the light comes through, and that is happening automatically. Biology and development is happening. We don't have to do development. It's happening anyway, all the time. There is a good quantum physics professor, or he died in 2014. He was a professor for quantum physics at the Max Planck Institute and in Munich. And he once said, look, you know, we believe that the world started with a Big Bang, and then a linear process developed us to the point where we are. But honestly speaking, he said, he believes there's a bang in every moment of our life, which means everything that through our conscious belief can be changed. We can change our direction immediately like that. We just have to understand what is the anxiety, what is the fear behind it, and what is really guiding us. And I see that more and more, especially young people, are coming up and building communities. Communities where they live together, communities where they work together differently, where they decide who is the CEO, for instance. I see a lot of companies arriving right now in Europe and seeing that they are trying out different ways of doing it, where they limit the extent how much a CEO is earning compared to the one who is earning the minimum revenue in that company. So there is a lot going on in different areas. I have friends who are building up a community here in Munich right now, where they're doing work close to Munich, where they're coming together with 50 people, where they started a collaborative kind of farming, not by themselves, but they hired a farmer and they rented or bought some land, and they are, which provides them with the food. Of course, there are people who are doing, you know, there are teachers there who are going to school and teaching. There are people who are working in companies. So it's not that they are all working only together, but they started to say, we would like to live together in a different way. We would try to limit our environmental footprint. And we would like to create a culture of openness and understanding and curiosity, which helps us collectively, but also individually. That's what I see. Also, I see in education. We had a conference last year in 2019 in Munich, where there was a former school teacher, dean of a school actually, And she has developed a different way how to educate the children, the pupils in the school. And that was recognized so broadly that she is now being asked to elect certain schools in Germany to walk with them through the transformation process. The main thing what she is doing is that she's saying the pupils themselves decide what they want to learn, and the teachers become kind of coaches, providing them interdisciplinary the material so that they can learn. And we are trying to help them, also with Wisdom Together, to help the teachers and help the parents, actually, to understand what that means from their part, so that we don't leave them alone with a concept and saying, oh, here's the concept and now do it, but try to help them and build with them a new understanding of what they want to create and emerge together with the people, together with the children. That is something which is supported by the government, by the federal government, where I already see, wow, there is a change. The major change, because what they thought up to now is schools are, their function is to create workforce for an existing working environment and market. And now they say, we don't know. When they are older, we don't know how the market is, what the demands of the market is. And let's more strengthen their flexibility, their ability to get to their intuition, to see, to learn from themselves, create curiosity instead of just providing them with content which they have to learn. So that big change is what I see currently is happening. And then you know what's happening in America. You know, so many people right now on the street. And even yesterday in Munich, where I'm living, there were 25,000 people on the streets what was happening there in America and saying, we have to fight racism. We have to be against it. So we see currently on a local as well on a global basis, we see that there is a solidarity, and solidarity not on profit margin. There's a solidarity on meaning, on purpose, and the question, how do we want to live together?
That's a very difficult conversation actually to have. How do we want to be left together? But from what you are saying, looks or sounds like that there is a lot of effort from being individual to collective going on.
Change is always happening, not overnight. It's something which is developing. Even revolutions are not happening overnight. It's an emerging process. Sometimes it's a little bit quicker and more intense with severe consequences as well, as we all know, out of history.
Yeah.
But sometimes also it's like a slow process. And through this process, you always have people who are a little bit on the forefront, leading edge, you know, trying to see what is happening, experiencing it. And the majority is in between, is observing, is saying, oh, I'm not comfortable where I'm right now, but I don't know whether this is the right path for me. They are trying to find out more on the, I want to be on the secure side, which is not possible, but they will find out by themselves. And then you have some people who are trying to keep the existing system, because that is where they gain power, where they feel comfortable, where they have influence, where they know what to do. And we see that right now on a lot of different levels. We see that, and that's why we have currently, if we're looking at who are the leaders right now and of a lot of countries, we have severe criminals actually are leading us. You know, people who are lying, people who are betraying others, people who have no ethics, no moral, no values beside themselves. Those people are being elected right now. We see that in Brazil, we see that in America, in Turkey, in Hungary, name it, you know, in Philippines, you know, in China. So you have those people are trying to keep the existing system or the existing power structure, since that is what supported them, and that is where they feel comfortable. And some of these people might even think that is the right way for the others.
Oh.
But I see it, this is where the crack is coming in, and you see that more and more kind of uprising, more and more kind of alternative projects are emerging. You know, more and more people are saying, we don't want this. You know, we would like to have something else. More conversations are coming in about meaning, about purpose. Even I had recently a conversation with some politicians and some business people where they were warning for a recession. They said, oh, there will be a recession. And they said a number like, we have a minus growth, which is an interesting word by itself, but we have a minus growth of 8% right now. And I said, okay, then where were we when we minus 8%? Where were we? And they said, yeah, the mid of the 90s, we were at that stage. I said, well, I felt good at that time. So recession is only a word which is threatening inside an existing system which is based on growth, on profit margin. Because if we are not believing in that kind of growth anymore, recession is not a threat, because then recession is not existing. So for me, it's not a question of how can we avoid a recession. For me, it's a question, what kind of system do we need in the future? How do we want to live and work together in the future? What did we learn from it? And that does mean that we cannot have growth. But growth is not the only thing to focus on. And that is what I think is needed right now. And there are models. There is enough in this world for everyone.
Yeah.
You don't need, you know, to say, I have to grab my thing because I don't know whether I have enough tomorrow. That's bullshit. That's not true. And so that, and to have this kind of thinking is needed to, you know, to bring that into society through this kind of talks, through speeches, which I give sometimes, through coachings, which I do, through interim management, where I'm helping companies and organizations to think about the restructuring of their company. And then by doing so, I'm always trying to focus first on the culture, on the purpose, on the meaning. Why are they doing what they're doing? If they are aligned with it, then we can work on the structure, on the operational, on the processes. And that goes very, very concrete. We can go to the bonus systems, how that is constructed, to the decision-making processes in companies, in organizations. We can restructure this. So we can do a lot of things. Supply chain management, of course, you know, sustainability of the products. And that is what we can look upon. And that is a very meaningful and, for me, great experience.
A little bit into a closing, but also the last topic that I wonder what you think you started to touch about. You know, if we have a word that everyone in business seems to pray right now, it's digitalization. What do you think of that?
I found that, again, digitalization is for me a very dangerous path if we only see that as a solution. I'm coming from that world. I work for Google, I had a lot of conversation with these folks. I see there is a trend right now, how we perceive the world and how we, a lot of people want us to live. There's this trend of transhumanism, cyborgs, you know, bringing human and technology together. There is a Google-supported Singularity University, which is more a consulting company, but they call themselves University. With Ray Kurzweil, who was saying in 10 to 15 years, everybody will have a chip in his or her brain. And then the solution will be there because we have much more capacity. I see that as a big threat. But that is a trend which a lot of people are focusing right now towards. Robots are emerging. Then we have one trend which I think Harari in his latest book Homo Deus created this word called dataism. It's a new form of religion. Everybody believes in data. Data is a new religion. So that is one trend, and everybody tries to collect as much data as possible, even though they don't know what to do with it. But having it is first, we need to have it.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot of investment is going into this direction and saying the more data this person or this company has, the more valuable it is, even though they also don't know what they really want to do with the data. It's a little bit like Secret Service. They are so anxious and insecure that they want to collect everything to feel more secure. Mm. And the more they're trying to go into this path, the more they know how less they know, and so they collect even more. It's becoming a kind of a disease, a psychological disease. So we have transhumanism, we have dataism. And then there is a third trend, which is long before us, a long time ago. It's called the Homo economicus from Hobbes. And Homo economicus reduces our human beings, just our being focused on commercialization, on making the most profit for you as the individual, as a person. Profit margin first. That is what this concept is entailing. So bringing those together is currently what people are trying to enforce our societies to go through. Maximum control, which is based on transhumanism. If you have a chip in your brain, everybody can control you. Homo economicus, this person should consume as much as possible for stabilizing a certain kind of structure and economy. And how can we do that? Based on data. The more data we have, the more we can analyze. And the more our artificial intelligence is able to provide us with even more data to understand much better how we can influence these people. That is this is the direction. And digitalization is enforcing that. It's a part of this thought.
Oh.
And I think what is missing there is liveliness, love, and sense. All of these three things, which for me makes life, that is what life is for me, liveliness, love, and sense. So if you give an algorithm command and you tell him, artificial intelligence algorithm, you tell him he should bring you the best coffee in the world, then this algorithm is trying to find out, based on the data which is available, the best coffee. He can even build inside this command, he can build a kind of scheme, he can find out, oh, he liked this, and he was at Starbucks, or he was at that coffee shop, or he was there, and he sometimes likes tea, and he brings all the data together, and he tries to find out what can be the best coffee for you. He's trying to find the best solution for you in this particular area. But this algorithm will never ask you, is coffee really good for you? So the sense is not there.
Yeah.
And the sense, if we are becoming transhumanism, we're becoming a part of a big engine, we will no longer ask ourselves about the sense, about love, about meaning, about purpose. We will just function. The question is, do we want to go this path? I don't think we want. And because of that, I think it's that first, we have to come to ourselves. We have to do really, for me, work on your own reflection, meditate, or going into the woods or connecting with nature, connecting with other people, trying to understand what is emerging from you, what are the questions which are important for you, not trying immediately to find answers. Wait until something comes up, it will, and then work on this. Work on that part. I think that is important. And not, you know, to rush into a so-called solution, or we have to digitalize. When I'm coming into companies currently, and I had several companies asking me for help, and they said, we have to digitalize. I have to say, oh, that's interesting. What do you mean by this? And why do you think it's necessary for you? Most of these people don't have an answer.
No.
They just say, oh, digitalization is needed. I said, let's find out whether this is really true.
Yeah.
And if it's true, in what part of the company it's true? Maybe in other parts it's not true. Maybe, you know, so it's not neither nor. It's really first understand what you as a human, as a person, wants to do. And then we can find out what kind of tools are there which helps us to go through this. And technology can be a part of it, can be one tool, but not the only ultimate solution.
Well, let's see where that's stopping. This is a global stopping.
Absolutely.
If that would enable, you know, people to invite people to go deeper into themselves rather than going outside and wanting things. So,
have you heard that interesting quick story about Facebook? I read that what they did last year, everybody is working on quantum computing and AI, you know, artificial.
Yeah.
And currently there is even more than that. There is a general AI and there is a super AI. So what happened to Facebook, to their engineers, their computer scientists, they developed AI, and at a certain stage, I think at the end of last year, they shut all the computers off, which they used to work on this AI, because the computer started to talk to each other in a language which these computer scientists didn't understand anymore.
Is that not a movie you're telling me?
That's not a movie, that's true.
Okay.
That is clear. You know, if we compare, and that is really what I'm always saying to people who say, yeah, but we need technology and digitalization, because computers are much more intelligent than humans can ever be. That's what a lot of people say. So, and then I'm going back to their definition of intelligence.
Yeah.
If you put yourself in this way of thinking, what I just have described, using data, optimizing results, and trying to bring that together in one function, yeah, you will never compete at a certain point of time. Maybe even now. But that is not what life is about. And that's what they don't understand sometimes. If they know what love is about, and I spoke to in Stanford, actually, to a professor of computer science. He is working on artificial intelligence, and he said, oh, Alfred, don't tell me that. I only believe in things which I can measure, which is evident, you know. I said, yeah, I understand that. Do you have a wife? I asked him, and he said, yes. I said, do you love your wife? He said, yes. I said, how do you measure that?
What did he say?
He said, well, yeah, then when I love, there are certain proteins and molecules.
Oh, okay. So there is an attempt to measure.
No. And I said, that's a consequence, but it's not the love, isn't it? That's not the ultimate thing which is initiating these consequences in your body. I said, yeah, you're right. You get a point. I said, so So let us admit that there is something in life which you cannot measure, and with the way you are trying to understand reality. So there is a different reality which you cannot measure in this kind of thinking. If that is there, let's try to see what that means for us, because that is what life is about, isn't it?
Yeah.
He was like, let me think about it.
Okay. So do you think you got his mindset cracked a bit?
I think there a little crack is there, certainly came out there.
I was just wondering if you could have a last crash course for programmers.
Absolutely, yeah, because that is, but really not, because this, we're using words in such a limited way, and words have so many, a word have an energy, you know, if you're creating a sentence or a word in a certain way, and Sanskrit is a good example for that, one of the first languages, which is very vocal voice, vocal focus. But everything that we are using, our words have a meaning in a certain way. And it places an energy at a certain point. So I think love, for instance, is a word which a lot of people associate with sexual experience. And that is maybe a part of it, but not definitely not what the whole spectrum of love is. And that is, I think, also what we are discussing. How can we teach our children to understand what that is? So what love is with them? And how can they bring that out? How can they can not only love for others, but love for themselves as well? So to understand, to accept yourself, to that is a very basic fundament of being flexible than in life. Because if you don't, if you're always trying to get a kind of feedback, positive feedback from others, from the outside, you don't know where to go by yourself.
Yeah.
And that is so important, especially in crisis. And that's why I think those ways of, you know, retreats, workshops, conferences, which are also very interactive, also a Zoom call can be, but only as an addition, never substitute really live coming together meetings from my perspective. I think that is important to create that and helping companies and organizations to transform. And I think we can learn a lot also from each other.
Yeah, that's true. So Alfred, thank you so much.
All the best to you as well.
Yeah. Bye then.
Bye.